Well, good afternoon to all of you. I very much appreciated the sermonette we heard this afternoon, and it never ceases to please me or amaze me or whatever, not really amaze me anymore, it did at first, but how God works out the intertwining of the subjects, and one complements the other, and at least I'm hoping I'm going to complement what he had to say. But I'd like to title the sermon here this afternoon, for those of you who like titles, The Rules Rule. The Rules Rule. And I have the second, or I have rule in parentheses, in quotes, because that's a common term that our younger generation likes to use, that whatever particular thing happens to be in fad, that's the one that rules. And in this case, we're going to be talking about rules and how they rule. They rule our life, and they are the foundation of everything that we do. But we may not even realize that. And I'd like to read a little excerpt here from, some of you are familiar with Tony Snow. He has he's on Fox TV and the news sometimes in commentary, and he also has a radio program. I believe I'm not sure what it's called. Town Hall, something like that. Anyway, he wrote an article, which was pretty interesting, going over all the events that have taken place down there in New Orleans. And, by the way, I had to, since our mutual friend, Mr. Bill Bradford Sr., is from New Orleans, I had to be corrected when I got to college. And where are you from? Oh, you're from New Orleans. No, that's not. That sounds really bad to someone from New Orleans. So just so you know, don't offend anybody if you're talking to them. It's New Orleans and Louisiana, not Louisiana. Okay? But anyway, that aside, he goes over and reviews a lot of the things that have been happening over the last couple of weeks, and I thought it was a pretty interesting editorial. But he got down to a point, and I hadn't particularly planned to use this, but I thought this would be a very good thing for us to think about when it comes to rules and principles and laws in our lives. He said, "We Americans always have measured ourselves by three things: our resilience, our ambition, and our determination to do the right thing. Every unexpected setback calls forth strengths and virtues latent in the national character, special skills we never dreamed would lie within us." And he goes on, uses New York as an example of how they handled the situation. And I had to stop and think about that for a minute when he said we have this determination within the character and deep inside of the American heart to do the right thing. Well, that sounds good, and then I think most people do try to do the right thing. But the question is, what is the right thing? How does he know what the right thing is? Where did he determine, or how did he determine what that is? What is that based on? The right thing. Now, the right thing to us might be one thing, right thing to somebody else might be something else. Is the right thing, in his explanation here, is it the best for me? Is it the best for you? Whatever you consider to be the right thing. How do you determine that? Oh, well, maybe it's the golden rule. You know, treat others the way you want to be treated. Well, and where did that come from? The so-called golden rule. And then we get down to what I was thinking back here a couple days ago when I was in high school. And we had a situation. I think I was a junior in high school at that time. We had a teacher by the name of Mr. Beckwar. And he was, I don't know exactly, because when you're 14 or 15. It's hard to judge older people, you know. But I'm going to guess he was probably in his late or mid to late 20s. And he was a very enthusiastic young man, and he was very opinionated, and he had, I think, a little bit higher degrees, evidently one in science, because he was the biology teacher. And many of you are familiar with the original Glenbard High School over here in Glen Ellen, better known by those of us who went there as the dump on the hump. But that's another whole story. But it was a very high-quality school, as I found out after I graduated, and it was rated about second or third in the state. And it had very principled individuals running it. The superintendent of schools was a very religious and very principled, hardworking gentleman who had the high respect of everybody in the town and in the administration. We had a physics professor who was a doctor, Dr. Grunewald, who worked on the atom bomb secretly underneath Soldier Field here in Chicago. And he was a real joy to learn from as far as physics was concerned. And we had a very, very extensive physics lab, and we had a very extensive biology room that we used for class, and it had a little lab off of the side. And this particular teacher began to espouse evolution. And believe it or not, this was in the 50s, the late 50s, the general population didn't really believe in evolution. This was the newer, up-and-coming concept. I'm sure it was being taught in universities. Obviously it was, because that's where he learned it. And he was going to not just share that with us, he was going to stuff it down our throat, which he proceeded to do. And he made statements such as, there is no eternal truth. There is no room, he said, for a superior being or God in the laboratory. Now, these are high school kids who most of them had were, you know, attending some type of church with their parents. They all believed in God. Or to one degree or another. And this was very unsettling for all of us. But he didn't just make those statements. He went on to give extensive proof. And to a young mind, he was very convincing and very impressive, because he had all these scientific facts showing evolution that we'd never heard about, and proving this thing of there is no eternal truth. In other words, everything is relative. It may be true today, but it's not true tomorrow. And, of course, the Bible could not be accepted, because, of course, that was brought up in some of these discussions. There were questions and answers and so on, but he made sure that he brought the Bible up. For example, the Bible, because it was, you know, you have a logical thing that you work back with, and that is that man is fallible. Therefore, anything that man does can't be trusted to be eternally true. And since man wrote the Bible, you can see the logic. So the Bible is nice and has good principles, but it cannot be accepted as an eternal truth. It is all relative, and it's written by man, and therefore, because man is fallible, the Bible is fallible. Does that make sense? So we're all sitting there going, whoa, I never heard that before. And we all went home and accosted our parents with these new truths that we were being given. My poor dad. Anyway, so this went on. He was not very popular with the administration or with the superintendent, and I can't remember exactly what he did. The superintendent would get on the intercom, and he would give certain thoughts for the day and reference to God and various other things and principles to all the students there in the high school. We had 2,000 students in our high school, 600 in my graduating class. And so it was quite a large school, but it was a very peaceful and high caliber place with really qualified teachers. Not every teacher was that qualified, but most of them were. But this was a real shock to the society there at the high school. And it came out later in speech class when, I've forgotten what the subject was, but all of the students expressed the fact, one way or the other, because this was really upsetting to people, that they still believed in God, but they had some doubts. You know, there were other, he had planted these doubts. Well, he lasted about 2 years and they got rid of it finally because he upset the whole society there and they were not ready for this kind of thinking. But you have to realize that that began back, let's say, in somewhere in the 50s, where this concept of no eternal truth, the Bible cannot be looked upon as anything solid because it was written by man. And we have to agree that it was written by man, but it was inspired by God. But if you don't accept God as being God and that there is a God, well, then, of course, you can't accept the fact that God inspired his servants to write the Bible and that it is eternal truth. The whole concept is, of course, Satan's way of thinking. It is his basis for thinking. And he's trying to affect the whole society, and he keeps pounding away at the society from one way after another, any way he can, to cause disbelief and doubt in the veracity of the great Creator God and Jesus Christ. Well, we went through a lot of these things, and I remember talking with the church pastor here in Chicago extensively about some of these things, and finally that became very clear to me, and I could see through his arguments. But it did upset me a great deal, and it upset all the other students as well, regardless of the religious background they came from. Well, then later on, things continued to be taught in the universities. More of this was taught in the high schools, evolution, no God. Then we began to get into the next area in the phase, probably in the 70s sometime and into the 80s. For example, some of you remember Debbie Boone's hit song, and it all goes along very nicely until she comes to the one line where she says and sings this beautifully, "How can it be wrong if it feels so right?" So if it feels good, do it. Now think about that concept for a while. You've heard that, especially the young people. Well, maybe they aren't saying that today. They're saying something else. I'm not current right now on the current phrases or whatever that we had, the me generation and all these things. But the bottom line being that, especially when our children were going to high school in the 80s, it was simply, if it feels good, do it. If you feel it's good, do it. And then they tacked on this little phrase, well, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else. You can do whatever you want if you feel like doing it, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else, which is a big fat lie. There is no thing you and I can do that doesn't affect someone else, reputation, family. But what they were trying to get people to think and feel and focus on is, do what you want. There are no rules. There are no laws. You don't have to do anything. If you feel like doing it, then that's okay. That's a good reason. And I think I've mentioned this to you before. Our boys were certainly this way, more so than our daughter. She started, usually if I had to correct her for something, crying before I could do much discipline. But anyway, the two boys were the same because they had the same kind of training and background that all of us here in this room who have children, well, everybody in this room, we're all paying our taxes so that we can have our children miseducated and teach them all of these wonderful things that my parents were paying for and now we're paying for. And so whenever they did something wrong, of course, they didn't want to get into trouble. They didn't want to admit they had done it. And so after about 10 or 15 minutes of, well, why did you do that? I don't know. After about 15 minutes of I don't knows, finally we get down to the bottom line. Well, I felt like it. I wanted to. Isn't this exactly what the society is teaching them? If you feel like doing it, do it. It's okay. Do what you feel like doing. How can it be wrong, as she said, if it feels so right? Is that the basis? You know, this is the thing that I couldn't believe when he wrote this, to do the right thing. How do you know what to do as the right thing? What do you base that on? Now, he has a concept in his mind of what the right thing is. Take care of people, I guess, if they're sick. Try to rescue them. Do all of these things that are good things. But, how, you know, where does this stop, and how do you decide that that's really the right thing? By whose definition? By whose rules, foundation? By what? If you don't believe in the Bible, and if you don't believe in God, then it's whatever you feel like, whatever seems good to you is what's right. And so it gets, you know, when I look back at some of these things, it really did really upset me and all of the people that were around me there in school. And then as a college representative, as part of our job in working for the church back then, we had to interview lots of college students who wanted to come to Ambassador College. And so I got into a great number of different colleges and universities. I sat in on some classes. I could not believe the, what I call, circular reasoning that some of these people or these professors tried to dump off. Happened to be at the University of, I guess, Washington in Seattle. Expository writing class. And this professor talked around in a circle. It was all about eternal truth and this whole thing. And he talked around in this big, giant circle. He never did answer the question. And when the student who was asking said, well, that didn't really answer. Well, then he kind of, the professor kind of jumped on the student. And, of course, the student's interested in getting a good grade, so he shut up. And I'm sitting back there just shaking my head to myself and thinking, these poor students, they're paying this money to have some individual talking around in a big circle in this big philosophy baloney. And it was all emptiness. And that's what our wonderful universities, this is why I encouraged our son Tom to study engineering. You can't screw up two and two too bad, although they try. But even he, when he was down at University of Illinois, which is one of the top electrical engineering schools in the country, I'm graded at number 3, he had to take some of these psychology courses and so on, and it started to affect or influence his viewpoint, and we tried to help straighten that viewpoint out. But when you're a young person and they're pouring this stuff into you, it seems good, and it looks and sounds appealing. And it's very, very upsetting. And so, but we have to think again for ourselves what the difference is between where we are in our life and what we believe. And sometimes we take for granted kind of what I think this Tony Snow has done. From listening to him, he has pretty sound principles of right and wrong. He doesn't realize it, probably, but they all come from here. And this society that we live in was established on a religious foundation when it began. That was the whole reason the country began, was people trying to escape religious freedom or having religious freedom and having an opportunity to do more than they could in the very restrictive society in Europe. And they came to this country with very strong religious beliefs. And whether people like to admit it or not, the Constitution was founded on the principles of biblical principles. And so that's really where Tony Snow's foundation, what he considers right and wrong, and he would look at something and he would evaluate it as being right and wrong. A lot of his principles and feelings are based on that training that came through his family, I'm sure, and so on, and he doesn't even realize it. It's still very, very deep in the character of this country, because in the small towns and the little areas in the farming communities and so on, and even when you, and I watched as much as I could on TV while this hurricane situation was going on, and the people they were rescuing and so on, if you were listening to their comments, they were very religiously oriented. They were very focused on the fact that God saved them and helped them, and many, many comments from all these people that they interviewed in references to God, which impressed me. Because people, when you're in the foxhole, they say there is no such thing as an atheist, and the bullets are flying. When you are in an emergency, your mind does turn to your faith and to God and asking him for protection. And those people were happily acknowledging that, which I was very impressed with. So there is still a deep religious viewpoint in this country, more so than what all the great educators, and having spent 7 years on the East Coast, it's a great deal different on the East Coast and more progressive, shall we say, and in some ways more educated in these things that I'm just talking about, and many more people that believe in evolution and not God and so on than you would find maybe down in New Orleans or some other areas. Well, let's take a look here at what God says in reference to the laws. Because the laws, whether we like it or not, do rule our lives and rule our society. And I'd like you to turn to Romans, the second chapter, verse 14, and see what Paul had to say about this in reference to the Gentile people who did not have God's law. You might say, well, there are societies out there that are that have rules and organization and government, maybe different than ours, but they have rules, and where did they get those from? They don't believe the same thing we do. They don't have the same biblical foundation as a country. Romans, the second chapter, verse 14, he says, "For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these, having not the law, are a law unto themselves," which simply means they learn by hard experience you can't go around stealing your neighbor's things. You can't go around murdering people, at least if you're going to have a civilized society and you're not going to have chaos reigning. And I can't think of the movie now, but it was supposedly after the atomic attacks and so on. And I can't think of it, but anyway, it's the day after, and then there was that other one where they're in Australia and they're running around with all these crazy cars and shooting at each other and roving bands. And, well, you see what happened. Even down in New Orleans, they started having shootouts and everything else. And I'm trying to think here. Yeah, it was a report on the radio the other day of a family that had a nephew that was in the police department down there in New Orleans, and how he had gotten shot at and he'd returned fire, and all these things were going on. When there's no law, when the few people who are lawless and who are kept in check by the laws, when all of a sudden the law is removed and they can do whatever they feel like, all kinds of crazy, terrible things happen. And it's a very, very small percentage of people, but it doesn't take too many to cause chaos for those who don't want to live by the rules and the law. And so the Gentiles learn through experience themselves that a society has to have rules. There has to be law and order, and there has to be a set of standards that is adhered to. Without that, you will have total chaos. That's pretty obvious, I think, in many, many situations you could point to. So the answer, or the question then, would be, can a society function without laws and rules and still have order? And the answer is no. And they learn that the hard way themselves. So humanity has to have some type of rules or there's going to be total chaos. Let's go back to Exodus, the 20th chapter. And I don't want to read the Ten Commandments to you from the point of view that I'm instructing you in the Ten Commandments. But I want to show you, just in principle, how Satan the devil broke every one of these commandments. Satan has taken the position, a total opposite of each one of these laws. He started out, of course, in verses 2 and 3, it talks about the fact that that God the Father, and he said, I'm the Lord God, and you shall have no other gods before me. Well, Satan didn't like that idea. He thought he should be God. So that was the first thing he did. Second thing was, he bowed down or looked to himself as the one who should be worshipped, and certainly not God the Father. Now, God made the Sabbath day for rest, and he certainly didn't, and it shows where it, when it was created and set aside, and he certainly has done everything he can to desecrate that particular institution. He certainly didn't honor his father at all. He went the other exact opposite way, trying to attack God, trying to attack his father, who was the one who created him and put him into existence. And he tried to deceive a third of the angels, which he successfully did. He tried to deceive all of them, but he got at least a third of them, and they tried to overthrow their father. And of course, he is definitely a source of murder. And, you know, the principle of adultery, as far as spiritually is concerned, he certainly broke that. He tried to steal what was God's and take it for himself. Christ called Satan, the devil, the original liar. Not only was he a liar, he said, but he was the original liar. And, of course, Christ was there, and he saw it begin. And he coveted, definitely coveted what the Father had and wanted to try to take it away. And he wants to take what God is offering us away from us. So he's everything opposite of these rules and laws. He lives, and is his existence, totally against this and totally opposite. His standards are reverse from these 10 principles. Now, the society we live in is influenced by Satan. And Revelation 12:9 says Satan has deceived the whole world. And so he's teaching these 10 opposite principles. He's trying to promote the idea of going against every one of these. He's trying to promote, there are no rules. Don't tell me what to do. And this is the concept that I see around me currently, is I don't want to be told what to do. I make my own decisions. I decide what's right and wrong and what's good and bad. It's not based on the Ten Commandments. It's based on how I feel and what I want to do. Now, obviously, not everyone feels that way, or we'd really have total chaos, but more and more people are adopting that attitude and that viewpoint, and they conduct themselves in that way. Our foundation, as was explained in the sermonette, is based on these 10 principles, or these laws, or these rules, and they affect everything that we do as far as the way we look at things and our attitude and our viewpoint. But Satan's society is trying to go totally against every single one of these things and trying to get people to rebel against it. And we spend lots of money, as I said, on education. And unfortunately, that education has this constant drumbeat of opposition to God's way. Let's go to Proverbs, the third chapter, because Proverbs probably gives us some of the best insight into human behavior, mistakes that you and I humanly will make unless we have God's foundation. And this should emphasize even more that we by ourselves, as we'll see here, as God clearly explains, Proverbs, the third chapter, in verses 5 through 7, if left to ourselves, we will go in the wrong direction. If Tony Snow didn't have a basic, probably religious foundation of some kind, he wouldn't know what was right or wrong. Because Paul said, if there's no law, there is no sin. There are no Ten Commandments to break, then how can you sin? There's nothing to go against. You just do whatever you feel like. And guess what, brethren? That's exactly what we as human beings would do. And the reason I know that is because of what God says through Proverbs. These are the tendencies. This is the way man will go unless he focuses on God's way of life as his foundation. Proverbs 3rd chapter verse 5 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and don't lean to your own understanding. Don't say, well, it seems good to me. Well, it feels good. It looks good. Well, I want to do it. That's not the reason or the point of decision. You don't make your decision based on how you feel. You make it based on what is right and wrong, and this is the foundation that we have to look at. He says, in all of your ways, not just some, but all of our ways, we need to acknowledge or recognize or rely on God, and he will direct you. If we lean to God, and I'll just share this with you, brethren, it never ceases to amaze me at how God will help us and answer our prayers when it comes to even simple things like doing business or whatever. And we'll run into a problem that seems unsolvable. It'll be a mechanical or whatever problem. And I'll call the plant the next morning, and the engineer and our tool maker will come in, and he will say, you know what? I just thought of such and such. And it solves the problem, simply. And this has happened over and over, where he and I had spent the whole day together noodling this thing out. We could not come up with a conclusion or a solution. We left that night with no solution, and it was pretty frustrating. And then I just asked God to show us how to fix this thing. Now, that's in a physical way. But God definitely will answer our requests, even in our everyday life. We run into problems. You run into coworkers that are giving you difficulties or whatever. Just give it to God and ask God to take care of the problem. And you will be amazed at what happens. If you try to fix it all yourself, then to be facetious about it, God might be looking down saying, oh, well, you're handling that? Okay. Well, when you're done, and if you need my help, let me know. And then when we finally get totally frustrated and have it all messed up, and we go, God, please help me. Oh, okay. And then you see what could have happened and all the problems you could have avoided had you gone to God right away. And then you feel like a real dunce. And you go, oh, boy. And so you learn through time that there are certain situations you just have to ask for God's help. And he says right here, you acknowledge God in all your ways, and you go to him, and he will direct your paths. Now, he's expecting us to seek him in this direction. And verse 7, be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the eternal and depart from evil. And fearing God, of course, is relying on him, putting our feet on to the foundation of the commandments of God and all those precepts. You go through the whole book of Leviticus, talks about all of these sacrifices and so on, which if you went through a thorough study, you will see all the spiritual ramifications, that how it all pointed to Jesus Christ and the ultimate sacrifice. And then Deuteronomy, all the principles to live by on a daily basis, not just strictly the Ten Commandments, but, okay, in this situation you do this, in this situation you do this. This is how the government should be set up. If you run into this problem or whatever, this is what you do. It's all laid out, clear, simple, not hard. Those are principles. That's a foundation for deciding what is right and wrong. God's showing here that if we trust in ourselves, we're going to come up with the wrong conclusion. It might look good to us, but it's the wrong thing. Proverbs 12. You begin to see a picture unfolding here. There are more scriptures than what I'm going to read here in Proverbs or refer to them, but I just want to give you a feel. Okay, Proverbs 12 and verse 15. He says, the way of a fool, and all of us are really fools before God, but the way of a fool is a person who thinks he knows everything, he has it all under control, and he comes up with all these conclusions, which are totally wrong, and he gets himself in all kinds of problems, but because he's a fool, and he doesn't look to God, he thinks it's great until he falls into the trap. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. He is convinced this is the right way to go. This is what I'm going to do. But he that hearkens unto counsel is wise. In other words, the person who realizes, well, maybe I don't know everything here. Maybe I better get a little bit of input. But a fool who disregards God's instruction and his direction is going to come up with concepts that sound and look just wonderful to him. That's humanity. That is human nature. That is what we will all do unless we are relying on God. Let's go over to chapter 16 and verse 2. People always want to make decisions that are righteous and look good, and they want to do things that would appear to people to be, as God uses the term, clean. Okay, chapter 16, verse 2. All the ways of a man, he's not even using the term fool here, but just a normal human being, all the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes. But the Lord weighs the spirits and the attitude or the viewpoint. God considers the true motivation. But in the ways of a carnal mind, it all, whatever we come up with, well, that looks good to me. That sounds good. That's what Debbie Boone said. How could it be wrong? It seems so right. It's got to be good. If you don't compare our decisions with what God says, then you're going to go wrong. And if you can't come up with a situation and you just are baffled, then that's when we really need to turn to God and ask for his direction. Verse 9 in the same chapter, a man's heart devises his way, but the Lord directs his step. So we have to rely on God's direction. Proverbs 14, go back a couple pages here, and verse 12. And this one has been burned into my mind because this is, I've seen myself in the past and currently, you know, this is something we all have to fight and acknowledge. There is a way which seems right to a man. It just seems so right. That's so logical. Of course, we have forgotten about these other aspects over here, and our immediate human nature tends to look at it and go, okay, that's good. There's a way that seems right to a man, but you know what happens in order for the man or the person to find out that what he thinks is right isn't right? He's going to have to learn the hard way. He's going to have to go through. If he doesn't seek God, he's going to have to make these steps, carry out his decision, and then see it fail utterly and cause him all kinds of difficulties. And then he's going to look back and go, oh, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. But it seemed right at the time. I just know that the thing was good at the time. But it sure didn't work out very well. That's if he survives. That's if he lives. But God says, but the end thereof, of our human decisions, are the ways of death. It doesn't result in positive things, it results in a very negative conclusion. So we always have to be aimed in God's direction and always be trusting Him in everything that we do. Now notice in chapter 29 here, well, this is the last scripture in Proverbs, in verse 18, we're very familiar with this. We've quoted this a great deal, and is one of my favorite scriptures. In verse 18 of chapter 29, it says, "Where there is no vision or insight, the people perish." If they can't see the big picture, if they don't understand God's viewpoint, which is what it's really referring to, "But he that keeps the law, happy is he." If you keep God's law, you're going to be happy. Well, why is that? Because God's law is the right foundation. Now, you can ask yourself the prime example here of Satan, who has totally gone against every one of God's laws and principles and fights against it every way he can, is if he were allowed to, would try to attack heaven again or God's throne. Of course, he was kicked out, as you know. Christ said he saw him fall from heaven. If he were allowed to do what he wanted to do, he would be, you know, and he is trying to do that and trying to lead us in that direction. And the whole thing, without the right perspective and the viewpoint and trusting God, you and I would be very unhappy. But by having our feet solidly planted on God's laws and using those principles and precepts to direct our lives and going to God for constant guidance and so on, we're going to be happy. We're going to miss out on all of the penalties that we'd have to suffer by not following the law. Now, the Gentiles learned through hard experience. They had mass mayhem and chaos in their cities and so on until they began to, wait a minute, we've got to do something. I mean, even Saddam Hussein understood that if he wanted to have order, he had to be tough. And I'm not advocating what he did at all, because he wasn't just tough. You know, he was out there murdering people and annihilating whole societies and doing ethnic cleansing and doing all these things. But he knew, just like every other leader, you ever see a dictator who lets people do whatever they want? I don't think I've ever seen one. They enforce the law, whatever their law is. Whatever laws they make up, they enforce those laws, and then there is relative peace. But man learned the hard way and through death and everything else, but he said, God says here that if you keep God's law, you're going to be happy, because it involves thinking of other people. The golden rule, as I mentioned earlier, where did the golden rule come from? Of course, it comes from the Bible and from Christ's explanation. How we should look at one another. And we should love other people the same way we all love ourselves. And so, and to treat other people the way we would like to be treated. That's a godly principle. It didn't come from Satan. That came from the Bible. And anybody in this society who follows that principle, whether they realize it or not, are simply upholding the laws in God's Word. And they're living those things. And every one of the laws that people obey, they receive a benefit. For all of them that they break and go against, they're going to receive sadness and unhappiness. So Satan definitely went against all of those things, and he would like us to go against them. Now, there's a Chinese proverb, which Mr. Fay shared with me here the other day. We were talking about this thing, and he said, well, I've got this little fortune cookie thing, and I have it on my desk, and it happens to be the old Chinese proverbs, "Laws sometimes sleep, but they never die." Laws are laws, and you may not see the result of it right away, but it doesn't mean the law is not in effect. It's still there. Now, here is a man, and Mr. Covey's getting a lot of promotion here in the church. Bill talked about him a couple weeks ago, and and I'm mentioning it right now, but this was a very, very popular book that he referred to, and we referred to the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he calls these, in the index here, the contents area, he calls them principles of personal leadership. Every one of them is prefixed with the word principle. Principles or precepts or rules or guidelines, things that people have learned. You need to follow certain rules. You follow these rules in your life, things are better. Business people recognize this. This went around the business community years ago like wildfire. They were having seminars and having everybody read it as a required thing and so on, because it gave basic principles that if you live by these rules, you were going to be more successful. And a lot of those rules are based on biblical principles, surprisingly. The Church of God published a book by the name of Seven Laws to Success. And, of course, it emphasized the main law of relying on God. Ben Franklin had rules that he wrote about, principles that he learned through his life. I don't remember if Ben Franklin said this, but I believe he did. Early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise, and various other things. One of the things he probably learned is don't hold on to the string when the lightning, you know, is coming. That was a bad thing. But anyway, the interesting thing was that all of these successful people learned through experience that you have to have rules in your life, discipline, called character. He used Snow used this term, latent in the national character. Well, where does character come from? It comes from discipline. Discipline of what? Making yourself do what you don't feel like doing. That's what character is. It's living by the rules, living by the laws, which you may not feel like doing that right that particular moment. You may feel like doing this. But then you say, well, wait a minute, these are God's principles, these are God's rules, this is the right thing for me to do. I feel like doing this, but the right thing is this, and that's what I'm going to do. And that's something that we really, really need to emphasize to our young people and our children, because they're being taught in school, do what you feel like. And we have to teach them, no, you do not make your decision based on how you feel. You base your decision on what is right. And this is the foundation by which you judge right and wrong. And if it weren't for the principles that the country was founded on, we wouldn't have all of these people coming out of the woodwork, helping on their own, volunteering, doing what they did in 9/11, taking people into their homes and doing all, that's the right thing to do. Well, how do you know it's right? Well, this, we were taught that. You know, you help people if they're in need. Well, where did that come from? And so you work it back if you want to go reverse evolution, and it's going to come back right here. Somewhere along the line, the society was based on these foundational principles. They work. They're living proof. Even if they didn't believe particularly in God, even the Gentiles, as Paul said, learn that these are the right things. So I certainly hope that we will especially emphasize this to our children and be aware that those are the principles that our young people are being taught, and they're being taught it more and more than we realize. And let's finally here look at the conclusion of the matter and go to Ecclesiastes. We're already in Proverbs, so we can go over to Ecclesiastes, the last chapter. And this really concludes the whole story. Here was the wisest man, humanly, that lived, except for Christ, of course, but a normal human being that God gave extra wisdom to. He didn't use that wisdom the wisest way. And he tried and experimented and did all types of things. But when he was all done at the end of his life, he began to look back and realized, okay, I did this, I did that, It proved to him beyond a shadow of a doubt that the only foundation that people need to live by is this book, God's Principles, because he tried all the things that he felt like doing, and they produced bad fruits. And so the very next to the last verse here, chapter 12 and verse 13 of Ecclesiastes says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. This is what I learned, he's saying to us, in my life, after trying all these things, having nothing holding him back. He had all the money, all the power that you could ever want, and he was free to do whatever he felt like, and he did. And this is what he learned. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty, responsibility, reason for being of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. But our lives, as he said, are totally based on God's principles and ways, and without those principles and without those ways, we would have total chaos. We wouldn't have the country we do. The country is going slowly in the wrong direction. Maybe it's going faster than we'd like to see it go, but it's definitely not going in the positive direction. It's going in the negative direction. But it's going from a direction of a much higher moral standard to a much lower moral standard. And the moral standards are based on God's principles, even though people don't fully understand that. And it's something that we, as Christians, in God's understanding God's way of life, cannot let ourselves be swept along with this society, and we certainly do not want to let our children be influenced and tricked and deceived and then have to watch them learn the hard way and suffer because they got conned and deceived into thinking and basing their decisions on the wrong things. We want to teach them that this way of life is the only way that you can do. That's what Solomon learned after a whole lifetime of all the things he did, to serve God and to fear him and to base your life on his way of life.